You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
So as I said earlier, we are starting this series today called Cropped, and you'll see obviously what we're looking at here. We're going to be talking about some Bible passages that have been cropped, that have been cut short, kind of cut away, and that'll make more sense in a little bit. But that's what we're going to be doing this entire series, and so we'll talk more about that. But before we do, I need some volunteers-ish, meaning I need you to come up front and to be a part of a little quiz that I've got here. And so just hang on that slide. Don't move any further because of what's next. But I need someone. I'm going to do it this way. If you live in the Belleville, if your address is Belleville or Reedsville, raise your hand. Can you turn on the house lights there for me? Thank you. All right. Really? You're the only person in the room. Okay. All right. Oh, now it's that. I understand. That's what it means. If your address is Belleville, you don't raise your hand. All right. I need any one of you guys. There's like eight hands that all went up at the same time. So you decide who is the person that is going to stand strong for Belleville, Reedsville. All right. John is the sacrificial lamb. Okay, if your address is Lewistown, 17044, raise your hand. All right. Of course you all do. Yeah. All right. Wow, look at all these 17044s. Okay, all right. You know what? Let's bring Cherie up here since we don't know how much we're going to see of Cherie as they are getting ready to move away from 17044. All right, and then if your address is Burnham or Yeagertown, Burnham or Yeagertown on your zip code. All right, Travis. All right, Waylon, because I don't know about the Vargases. It's a little bit sketchy here because I'm pretty sure that their address, unless they're like, no, that's our new place. It's still Burnham. Oh. You guys are going to have to fight it out right now. Is Waylon going to come up or is there going to be a Vargas coming up? All right. Okay, and now Strode's Mills or McVeightown, if your address is Strode's or McVeightown. Yeah, Matt, you cannot come up here. So Ange, come on up. You should be, but, you know, I don't care. She's not wearing a Giants jersey that it represents Eli Manning. And I honestly don't expect anything of them. They made it to the playoffs. That's a big deal for me. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. You guys can each take one of these stacks of cards. And why don't you come out here, spread this way a little bit more so you're kind of all in the light in the middle. Okay, what we're going to do is we're doing a little superhero origins quiz. So you can take your clip off there. Those are your answer. That's your answer key. Oh, I forgot about that end of town. Oh, sorry. I was trying to. Okay. All right, so you've got a superhero origins quiz. And what's going to happen is there's going to be a clue. It'll be on the screen there or the screen behind you. And then you're going to have a moment to kind of register your answer by putting the logo that represents that superhero up front. So that's the one you're going to hold up. You get that? So each of those might be used every time. They might be used multiple times. They might not be used at all. Or I might be lying about the whole thing. So that's what you're going to do. Does that make sense? There's going to be a clue. And then there's going to be... Are you getting threats from back there that you better know your origins? Wow. Okay, so, makes sense? You get the idea here? So there's going to be a clue on the screen. You have a chance to answer, and then I'll give you the official answer. So, could someone help keep track? So, like, all right, since you're not up here, Vargas says, you need to keep track for Yeagertown, Burnham, and someone keep track for Lewistown. Right, you're Lewistown, right? Lewistown? Come on. All right, Kurt, we need someone from Bellevillians. Keep track of, all right, so keep track of how many we get here. And Matt? All right. Okay, all right, so here's, I think there's like 10 of them, maybe? I don't know. So here's your first clue. Bitten by a radioactive spider. Don't show other people your answer, because you don't want them to steal your answer, because that could be a giveaway, because this one is so hard. And especially since the logo doesn't have anything to do with the clue. All right, so what do you have? Go ahead and show your answers out. All right, they've got the symbol, and of course the answer is Spider-Man. Yes, Spider-Man with a hyphen in the middle versus other superheroes that don't have hyphens. So, okay, very good, very good. You all get 1 point, so keep track of that. All right, we need to move faster because I've got a lot to do. So the next clue is this: exposed to gamma radiation. And again, these are the stories of how these superheroes became superheroes. You have your answers logged on the front. All right, go ahead and show your answers here. Okay, so we've got a lightning bolt and three little gamma radiation symbols. And the answer is the Incredible Hulk. So it is not that answer. Yeah, it is. That is apparently that's the Incredible Hulk logo. There's also like a fist logo. But anyway, so yeah, the number two is Incredible Hulk. So we keep in track the fact that Belleville is not representing very well right now, just for the record, since you didn't raise your hands. Okay. All right, the third clue here. Struck by lightning. Trying to help out Belleville here. All right, everybody have their answers logged? Okay, struck by lightning, see what you've got? Are you kidding me? All right, and the answer to that, of course, this person was, you guys know who it is? The Flash, right. The Flash was struck by lightning, that's how he got his super speed. And the Incredible Hulk was exposed to gamma radiation, and you know that's how he got his giant green muscle skill. Okay, next clue. Injected with super soldier serum. Thinking. You have an answer? All right. You have your answers? Go ahead. Let's see your answers. All right. Okay. All of you have the incredible shield made of vibranium. And the answer, of course, to that one is Captain America. That's how he became a hero to America and a captain. Anyway, okay, moving on. The next clue. Receives superhuman power from the sun. Getting a little bit more complicated here. This is slightly a trick question. Log your answer. You have one yet, Belleville? All right. Oh. John, it's sad. Okay, let's see what you've got for your answers. Okay, we've got three of the little diamond symbol and one Superman symbol. The answer is, in fact, Superman. You might not realize that, but he is an alien. That's his superpower, but the sun gives him his super strength. And, so now, are we keeping score here? What's the score, by the way? What do we got for Belleville? You're not even paying attention, Belleville. What's John have? John, they can't even count. And they want to trade you. All right, he's got like 4 and 4 and 5. 5 for Burnham Yeagertown and 4. Okay, all right, so here we go. Here's the next clue. Next clue. Created by Ultron as a sentient, computer-driven being developed from the Mind Stone that was hidden inside Loki's scepter for the purpose of destroying the Avengers, but was stolen and infused with lightning from Thor's hammer to become a superhero with the power to fly, destroy things with his mind, and create capes. At least that's how it happened in the movie. So there's your short little origin story. All right, we ready? Go ahead, show us your answers. Okay, we've got a split decision here. The answer is, anybody? The Vision, which that's his symbol there, so it's a diamond symbol. We're good there. Hey, Belleville got one. All right. And if you've watched the movie, like that was one of the funny things, is that he suddenly then creates a cape with his mind powers. That's, ooh. Okay, so that is the Vision, and what's our score now? What have we got? 5... You missed 2 of them? Okay, 4, 5, 4. Okay, what? 4, 4, 6, 5. Okay, I think this might be the last clue. I think, maybe. I don't know. Okay, here's the next clue. Oh, no, it's not. Drenched by toxic chemicals in a spill. Yeah, I know. The really funny thing was that in the 50s, after World War II, everyone was afraid of nuclear weapons. So pretty much if you said they were exposed to nuclear radiation, that covered all of them. All right, you have your answers? Okay, go ahead and show us your answers here. Okay, all right, we've got three of the daredevil symbol and one of gamma radiation. And daredevil is the answer. He was toxic chemicals made him blind and have the super ability to be like a bat, because that's what happens. So just remember that. All right, next clue. Discovered a super suit left by aliens. Yeah, you know, come on. You haven't? All right, let's see your answers. All right, none of you, do any of you know who that is? Anybody? Ralph Hinckley, also known as the greatest American hero. Yes, so you're all correct. Awesome, high quality 80s television show. And so there are your. So what's our final score here? This is the end. That was the last clue. So what do we have for Belleville? 4? How do you only have 4? You've got like 4 in a row. All right, 5. 6. 7. Did Waylon win? Okay, all right. All right, you guys can keep your logos and take them home as a souvenir. By the way, your kids are doing the exact same quiz upstairs in Ignition. And if any of them get the greatest American hero, I want to know. oh, wow, I'm getting dripped on here. All right, well, so here's the thing. Wow. Get out of the way of the dripping. Can someone give me a paper towel? So each of these superheroes, their deal was that in an instant, they received incredible power. And that's why I had to choose some of those. I mean, a lot of them were also aliens and things like that. Just a couple. Thank you, sir. And I want you to, you know, if you know of any of those superheroes, that's their deal. They got, in an instant, they received these superpowers. And I want to talk about a passage today, okay, that a lot of Christ followers over the years, a lot of good church-going people, have used this passage in almost the same way. In this idea that, hey, once you get a little Jesus, you'll have superpowers to do everything. And I'm going to just kind of rock your world a little bit, hopefully, with this series to help you realize that, you know what, that's not what it says. And here's the verse. I think this is what's next. Is this what's next? Yeah. Philippians 4:13. Says, I can do all things through Him who gives me strength. Or I can do everything through Christ who strengthens me. And we kind of have this idea. And again, if you didn't grow up in church, you might not have heard this verse before. And that's cool, because we're setting you up for some good discussion, some good things to realize. And this verse, this idea of I can do all things through Christ, I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. I don't know how many times you've heard this and it might have been like, hey, we can win this game, because we can do all things through Christ who gives us strength. Hey, you'll get that job because you can do all things through Christ who gives you strength. We can survive this ordeal because we can do all things through Christ who gives us strength. And that's great. That's all exciting. We love to pump ourselves up and really feel good about these things. But unfortunately, that's not what the passage means, because it's been cropped out of its context. And so here's what the cropped part of this point is, that God, and you're going to see this every week, the cropped part, and then you'll see the completed part. And this idea that God can make me do anything I want. And that's how we've kind of come to understand it, because we have cut it out of its surrounding context. And you're going to hear this theme over and over and over again. You're going to get a chance to chew on it with your prime groups this week, to look at the importance of reading the Bible in context. But before we go any further, I want you to pay attention to this story I'm about to read. Now, you'll probably be better off listening to it then you will be, actually, it'll be on the screen, but you'll probably be better off listening. And I want you to tell you that this story that I'm about to share is 100% quotes from the King James Version of the Bible. Everything that I will say to you is a direct quote from the Bible. And those quotes are going to be in parentheses as I'm reading the story, which is why it'll be a little bit easier perhaps for you to just listen and not look at the screen because it'll distract you. And we're going to be flying through like 8 slides here, Billy. Okay? Ready to go? So let me read this story for you. The people gathered to see the battle and sat down to eat and drink old corn and sweet water. Eli sat upon a seat by a post, and he stretched himself that he may see good. So the people shouted, "Where are the 9? Let the young men now arise and play before us." The first came out and went into the field and stood every man in his place. And Peter called, whether it be good or bad, as one mocketh another do, with loud voices, "Thou art blind." And he stopped to make clean the platter. And the trumpeters sounded, "Kohath shall pitch." And Samson went and caught. David was up on the left side, and he struck it into the pan. Foul. The second was offered. He striketh. He missed. On the third, he struck him out. So Levite went in. He stood and measured the earth. He beheld and drove for a homer. And all the people shouted with a great shout. And Noah went in and did fly into the field. And Jotham ran away and, looking back, gathered it. And Aaron went in, and he worketh it 2 and 2. And Samson said, "Strike it." And Aaron spake, "A good man would not be one of them that strike." And the man refused to smite. And Aaron took, and he walked. Ammon sacrificed, and Aaron ran into the second, and overran. And with the bag afar off, a good man out. And it came to pass on second, Job caught the line and threw it the first. Therefore David ran and stood upon the first, put forth his hand, and caught the toss. This is the second death. Then Joseph could not refrain himself, and he cried, "Goodness! If thou continue in going down, our hope is lost, and my garments and job." And Abram went up, and Abram drove into the air, and Judah came in under it, and through the idleness of hands the fly droppeth through, giving him a double. Abram took wood and caught hold of a hard and high delivery and smote it into left. Thus and thus Israel fought against the Philistines till the 9th. For each, 1 in the first, and 7 times after that, they gathereth eggs. In the 9th, Israel went out in a row, and none came in. He sent diverse sorts of flies among them, and they caught them every one. The first man for the Philistines drew the third, and the fourth came to the outside. He walketh. The pitcher climbed upon the mount and pitched, and Moses put it on a pole for a homer, and Israel was beaten. All of that were quotes from the Bible, clearly taken out of context to make it a really interesting baseball story. The problem is we don't necessarily go to that extreme, but sometimes we do take things out of context, such as this verse, "I can do all things through Him who gives me strength." And we're going to be looking over the next 7 weeks at different passages that we have taken out of context. And we're going to kind of explore some of them and look at them. But the bigger picture here is understanding the importance of looking at the story, looking at a passage in the context. Because the Bible was written with a purpose. The Bible was written with specific intentions and ideas in mind. And it's easy and it's fun to be like, "Ooh, let's just take that part out and make it say what we want." But that is not the intention behind God, behind the way it was written. And we did a series about 2 years ago called It's Elementary. And you can go to mc3church.org and click on Listen to the Point and go to It's Elementary. And we spent 4 weeks looking at, there's the logo right there, 4 weeks looking at how to study the Bible. And so this is almost like a part two of that series, if you will, because we really took the time in that series to chew on how to study the Bible, which is observation, interpretation, and application. So this is kind of looking at some of those things, but the key theme is context. The key theme is looking at things in the context in which they were written. And we know how that works, and we'll talk more about this next week. But, you know, how many times have quotes been taken out of context or people taken out of context? That is not what I meant when I said that. And, you know, how many times do our kids, maybe on purpose, unintentionally, call us on that? You know, "Don't you dare come out of that room till it's clean." And then you call him for dinner. Well, my room's not clean. I'm not supposed to come down because you said, don't you dare come out of this room until it's clean. And I have to go to the bathroom. I peed on the floor because you said, don't come out of this room until it's clean. You know, I mean, whatever. And you know, because no, that's not what we meant. We meant in the bigger picture of, you know, doing your job. So we're going to be looking at some different passages through this series. And this week I want to chew on this one. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. And again, you'll have a chance in prime groups to talk about, you know, how have you heard this used? And again, it's not people like trying to be evil or malevolent. It's just kind of missing the bigger picture of what's going on. And hopefully that'll make sense in a little bit here. But the crop of this is God can make me do anything I want. The completed version of this verse. And I have some PowerPoint issues today that we will fix for next week. I just want to tell you the contrast is off, so I apologize. But the cropped version is God can make me do anything I want. The completed version, what this actually means in context, is that God helps in hardship. So so if you have your Bibles, you can go ahead and go to YouVersion there, Philippians, tap on 4. It's in the New Testament there. We're going to be looking at the context of Philippians 4:13, looking at verses 11 through 14, and getting a bigger picture of what's going on here. Because this passage doesn't mean that when you have Jesus, you have superpowers. It doesn't mean that Jesus will help you, you know, jump tall buildings in a single bound. You will not be faster than a speeding bullet. It doesn't mean that. Now, granted, I understand this. It doesn't mean that God can't or won't or couldn't do any of those things. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that this passage doesn't refer to that. Do you get that? Jesus walked on water. That was a miracle. God does amazing, miraculous things. People came back to life, including Jesus, throughout the Bible. I'm not saying that God doesn't have that power, but that is not what this verse means in context, in the passage. And this is what Paul writes. It's a letter he wrote to the church in Philippi. So first of all, understanding that background, that it's a letter. It's a letter written to a church that he planted to explain some things that were going on, to clarify some things. A lot of the letters, the epistles as they're often called, Romans, well basically Romans through the rest of the New Testament, those letters were usually written because there was a reason for it. Something came up, Paul heard about something. Sometimes they wrote a letter to Paul and he even says, in your letter you said this. And Peter as well and John, these letters were written with a purpose. And so he's writing this letter to this church in Philippi that he planted. And he says in verse 11, I am not saying this because I am in need. For I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. Yet it was good of you to share in my troubles. So looking at the context here, looking at the bigger picture of this passage, Paul basically shares that he's learned the secret. He's learned the secret to getting through life. And there's some things here that you probably won't be able to read on the screen, so you'll have to listen because of the contrast there. But the first thing is that we see Paul's experience. In verse 11, he shares his experience, and he says, I am not saying that. Let me back up. What is happening here? Right before this, he says, hey, I want to thank you, Philippian church. I want to thank you for remembering me in my time of trouble. Thanks for being concerned about me. Thanks for not forgetting me. And so this is a letter written to them. Say thanks a lot. And then he says in verse 11, he talks about his experience, what he's been through. He says, I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. And the word learned here is this idea of him experiencing some things. He has gone through hard times. He has gone through good times, as we'll see in a moment. But he says, I have learned, I have experienced. The Greek word means to experience this, to have gone through this time, so that when I say what I'm about to say, it's not just from some guy going, like, I think that would work. You know, I mean, it's not some theory. It's not some kind of like, I read it in a book once, I saw it on a blog. You know, there was definitely this really cool Facebook meme that could never have been Photoshopped, so it must be true. And so that wasn't the issue. Paul is saying, this is for real because I have gone through it myself. I have experienced it. And in this experience, he says, I have learned. I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. So again, thank you, church. Thank you, Philippians, for remembering me in my time. And I'm not saying this because I'm in need. I'm not saying this because I want something from you. Because I just want you to understand that no matter the situation, I have learned to be content. I've gone through the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I know how to deal. I know how to get through it. And so that's the first thing he shares about his experience, that he's gone through it. And so the second thing that we see is then Paul's, and you can't read this one probably at all, but Paul's expertise. And here's where it gets interesting. Like, he's not only has he gone through some of these things, but he's actually an expert in dealing with hardship, in dealing with the good, the bad, and the ugly. And he says here, he goes on in verse 12 and says, I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to be in need. And the word here is a cool word, because it's not just like, yeah, again, it's not I read it in a book. It's I've experienced it. And the word actually means to be an expert, to have expertise. He's like, I'm not just telling you this because one time, like when I was 3, we had this one day and I didn't get the full Happy Meal because they didn't have as many fries in the pack. He's not saying something like, yeah, once upon a time. It's like, no. I have gone through this kind of hardship. I have gone through a life like this that I am an expert. I know what it is to be in need. And the word need is this idea, you know, to be humble, to be poor, to be in a low position. It's not just financially, but, you know, maybe he was in prison. He's in prison even as he's writing this letter. You know, he's gone through some really, really hard times. And he's an expert. So he's coming to this church in Philippi. He's talking to us as the church today to say, look, what I'm sharing isn't just because I'm some guy out there that read a book. I'm not some person that has head knowledge or went through that thing one time. I mean, you guys remember, you've had conversations around the lunch table in school. You know, someone will share a story, and before they even finish their story, you go, oh yeah? Well, once I was, and then it kind of becomes this embellished, and then someone else, like, and little Johnny's like, oh yeah? Well, one time my mom's head even fell off when that happened. And they're like, oh yeah? Well, my mom's fell off, and my dad's head popped on her head, and then we fixed it all back together, and it's all good now. You know, because this idea of like, you know, like that one time that one thing happened, and I'm embellishing it. That's not Paul. Paul is saying, look, I have gone through this hard time. I've gone through difficult situations over and over and over again. So at this point, I know what it is to be in need, to be in a low position, to be in a bad situation. And then he says, and I know what it is to have plenty. And this word is often used for overflowing. The root word of this is to overflow. So you fill your coffee, you put too much in, it overflows. I know what that's like. He says, I've been there. When you have more than enough, he says, I am an expert. And when I have a little bit, or when I have a lot, and right now he's writing from a spot where things are not going well, he's in a hard time, a troubled time, he says, I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. He says, I'm an expert here. I have been through hard times and good times, and I'm in the hard time right now, and I want to tell you I know the secret. I'm an expert. I know the secret. And so what is the secret? Paul then shares his energy. What is it that drives me? What is my power source? What is my energy that moves me through this? What is it that helps me handle the good, the bad, and the ugly? What is it that gets me through the times when I've got so much? And the more often times when things are hard, when things are difficult, when I don't have enough. He says, his energy there is that I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. So verse 13 is Paul's energy. And verse 13, he goes on and says there, I can do everything through him who gives me strength. And so the context here isn't Paul saying, Jesus will make me win the game. Jesus is going to make it so I can find my car keys. You know, Jesus is going to make my life good. Jesus is going to make me rich. Jesus is going to make me happy. No, the context here is that Jesus is going to help me through all things. When I'm in good time, when I'm in bad time, the secret to my contentedness, the secret to my expertise, what I have learned over these years is that no matter what, I can do it because He gives me strength. Because Christ gives me the strength to endure. So again, it's not that Jesus isn't amazing. It doesn't mean that God is not supernatural. It means that in this context, if we're going through a hard time, or a good time, or a difficult situation, family problem, a job situation, money issues, you want to know the secret? The secret is that I can do all of this through Christ, who gives me the strength. And the word strength, the Greek word is endynamo. Endynamo. Power. Dynamite. In Christ who gives me strength, who endynamos me. And that's what he's saying. And actually the NIV, if you notice, I'm using the NIV 84, which is an older version. YouVersion uses the newer one. And the NIV on YouVersion, they actually changed it because people kept taking this out of context. They didn't change it like they changed the Word of God. They correctly translated it, let's put it that way, to make it say, I can do all this through Christ who gives me strength. The all this is the poverty or plenty, the hurt or the great. All of this I can do through Christ, through Him who gives me strength. I have been endynamoed by Christ. And so there's the context. As much as it's fun to crop that out and to say what it means, the context is, hey, no matter where we find ourselves, Jesus is going to give us what we need to get through. And then continuing with the context, he then shares his enthusiasm. Got Paul's energy and then Paul's enthusiasm. And in verse 14, he basically shares how grateful he is for the Philippian church coming through for him during his hard time. He's like, I'm not saying this because I want you to do anything for me. I don't need you to help me out, but I appreciate it. And that's what he goes on. And again, tying to the context in verse 14, he says, yet it was good of you to share in my troubles. Just to tie the bookends there. He's talking about the hard times that he's gone through, the good times. He can do all this, all things through Christ who gives him strength. And he says to the church, yet it was good of you to share in my troubles. Because it's not about supernatural power, superhero skill. The context of this verse is about God giving you and me and Paul the strength to get through our circumstances. The strength to get through our hardships. And so each week we're going to continue to look at these different verses. And some of them, you know, are probably like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Other ones, you know, might just kind of change your perspective. And you don't even have to agree with me. I'm not saying that you have to agree with me. I would say, take the time and look at the context. Look at the fuller picture. Look at what is going on in the story. I mean, if you're looking at an epistle, hey, read the whole thing. If you're looking at a letter that Paul wrote, read the whole thing. But at least don't just pull a verse out of context and look at it that way, because that's what we're going to be doing this whole series. So the cropped, Paul found the secret, which was his experience, his expertise, his energy, and his enthusiasm. That was the secret that he found. But the point is this, the cropped is, and each week we're going to look at it this way. Next one there we go. And again, these are all messed up because I messed them up. But the cropped and the completed. Each week, we're going to look at cropped, how we've kind of perceived it over the years. And again, maybe this is all new for you, and that's great because you're not even going to have to worry about cropping it because you're going to say it's context that's important. It's context that matters. But we've looked at this kind of this God can make me do anything I want. But completed, in context, this verse means that God helps in hardship. God will help us get through hard times. And frankly, I don't know, as neato as it feels to say that, you know, Jesus will help me run a 2-minute mile because I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. Jesus will help me with math. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. Sometimes we need help with math. Jesus will fix the light. See, we have this idea of this like supernatural thing. And that's all nifty, but honestly, the idea that Christ will help us in hardships is probably even more encouraging and more powerful, knowing that no matter where we find ourselves, Christ will help us. So I want to talk a little bit here about handling our hardships. How do we get through hard times? Paul says, I can do all things. I can do all of this. I can get through the hard times. I can get through the good times because Christ dynamos me, because Christ gives me the strength. Back up, please. So I want to talk about there's some things here that I want you to remember. So when we go through hard times, when we go through challenging situations, these are some things that are important for us to remember, because it's easy to say, yeah, okay, good, Jesus can get me through the hard times. And that's good. That's good to remember. But here's some practical things I think that will help us. Because, I don't know where you are. It's a new year. Last week was incredible. An amazing morning. I thought, what a great time. What a great way to start a new year with that the new worship experience. And, you know, and taking some time to throw away our past sin, our expired coupons, get rid of those things, and to deal with the sin and nail our current sin on the cross, and take some time to reflect on our relational issues and dealing with that, and just all the different things. I thought, what a cool way. But at the same time, you know, it's a new year. And as I shared last week, you know, there's like this I don't know, cultural, psychological thing that goes on. We say, hey, it's a new year. Okay, things are going to be good now. And, you know, some of you, the clock turned from 11:59 to 12 o'clock, and the same problems were still there. The same issues are still there. The same struggles are still there. And, I mean, as much as we were like, yeah, this will be good, here you are a week in, and maybe it's not. And so I want to just, some things in these hard times, when we go through hardships, when we realize that Paul is writing from prison, knowing that at some point he's going to die, he's going to be executed, to say, look, I know what it's like. I've been there. I've been there so much that I'm an expert. And here's the secret I've learned. The secret is that I can do all this. I can get through it all because Christ gives me strength. I can handle the hardships because God helps me through. And so here's some things to remember. The first thing that we need to remember is that God is present in our troubles. So if you're going through a hard time, and you will. And I've said this before, you know, we did a series a few years back called Wounded. And you know, it's easy sometimes for us to scale our hard times on other people's scales. You know, and you're like, oh, I had a really bad day because I found out that I have to work an extra 15 minutes. And that might be a big deal for you. And if it's a big deal for you, then let it be a big deal. Don't kind of step back and be like, well, you know, my mom died and my dog died, my house burned down and my car blew up. So I definitely have hardships and you don't. Like, we can't scale these things. And so I just want to kind of encourage you. Oh, it's encouraging, but I want to caution you to make sure, you know, because someone's, you know, you don't know what's like in their life. You don't know what's going on. So maybe someone's hard time, you look at it and go like, that's not a big deal. But just give them a little grace and some space to say, hey, if that's a big deal for you, I want to be here for you. You know, I want to help you through this. And so in those times, whether it is something catastrophic or something kind of annoying and challenging and frustrating, whatever it is, we need to remember that in those situations, and all situations, God is present in our troubles. And we're actually going to look at a passage in a couple more weeks that kind of throws a little bit more of a, not spin, but kind of we've twisted it to make it seem like, you know, this, a spoiler, where two or three are gathered in your name, you're there among us. And that's a fun one for Christ followers to quote, because they're like, yeah, God, there's two of us here. You're here. And I just want to let you know something, that if there's only one person, God is still present. So we'll get to that in a couple more weeks, and we'll talk about what that really means, what the context of that passage really is. But I want you to know that God, whether it's one of you, two of you, or 600 of you, God is always present in our troubles. And I love this verse, and I think we tackled this one. If it was the Heroes one, this Heroes Return, or if we did it in the Heroes. Did you do Joseph? Yeah, okay, so it's the hero's return. We looked at the story of Joseph. Kirk taught that one. And I love this verse in Genesis 39:20. And this is what it says. The context here is that Joseph had been sold into slavery by his brothers, not so good. He had been purchased by this guy named Potiphar. And Potiphar liked Joseph, and Joseph worked for Potiphar and was a good servant. Well, Potiphar's wife had an eye for Joseph. She wanted him in the worst way. And she wanted him and eventually kept trying to entice him. And at one point, they were alone in the house, and she says, "Sleep with me." And he leaves and runs away, and she grabs his cloak and then comes to her husband and be like, "Oh, look at this guy. He totally tried to take advantage of me. I got his cloak here." And Potiphar says, "That's fine. That's a problem. I really like you, Joseph." But, picking on with verse 20, Joseph's master took him and put him in prison. So here you've got this guy, Joseph, in prison for doing the right thing. And this is now the second time. He's been sold into slavery. Now he's in prison. Life kind of sucks for Joseph. I mean, it does. It's pretty bad. The place where the king's prisoners were confined. And then it says, "But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden." So obviously in context, the idea that God is with us when we're in trouble is real. It doesn't always mean that you're going to have to get arrested for doing something illegal and you're thrown into prison. It doesn't mean that the warden is going to show you kindness, okay? Don't do stupid things to get arrested, okay? Please. All right. So, but the idea here, and this is what's so beautiful about this passage, is that here Joseph is going through such a hard time. And the Bible takes the time to say, "But while he was there in prison, the Lord was with him." God never abandoned him. He wasn't alone. He wasn't going through this time. And God's like, "Hey, you try to do the right thing. Sorry, man. My hands are tied. There's nothing like that. God isn't saying, "Good luck. Hope you work it out. Sorry." Even if, get this, right? Even if Joseph did something stupid to get him put into prison, God doesn't abandon us. And that's what grace and mercy is all about through Jesus. But understanding that when you go through a hard time, when you think about Paul saying, "I can do all this, God gives me the strength, Christ gives me the strength," we need to remember that when you're in a hard time, God is with you. He has not abandoned you. He has not left you behind. He hasn't forgotten about you. He is with you. He is with you. And so, you know, no matter what the circumstance, no matter what the situation, you're not alone. Even if the people around you abandon you, even if the people that you thought were the closest to you leave you in the dust, turn their back on you, God doesn't. He is present in our troubles. And this is just one passage. There's so many cool stories throughout the Bible of God working in these situations and these people that it seemed like, wow, all hope was lost, but no. But God. But God. I love that. But God. Showing up there. The second thing that we need to remember when we're going through hard times is that, and Kirk kind of alluded to this as he was praying, and that is that God is perfect in His timing. God is perfect in His timing. God is perfect in His timing, not our timing. And I hate to say it this way, but we think way too linearly, that's a word, we think way too 24 hours, 7 day a week. God's perspective is so much bigger, so much more forward thinking that we sometimes are like, "Okay, God, I prayed like 3 minutes ago and you still haven't done it. Come on, come on, come on, come on." And, you know, and maybe we've been saying, "God, I've been praying this for 3 years. I've been praying this for 3 decades. God, when?" And I want you to know, and I can't answer because I am not God, but I can guarantee you that God is perfect in His timing. And so if it is something that God wants to happen, and wants to do in your life or through you, He will make it happen when it exactly needs to happen. Because that is the way God works. Because He did it before it needed to happen. You know, we don't even know, again, the big picture. We don't even get and realize that there's things that if this had happened earlier, then it wouldn't have worked. I mean, even some of the MC3 story of where it all kind of, how it all came down together. And some of the things that we thought, oh, good, we're going to be financially stable because of some of the things that are going to be happening here. And all of a sudden, things changed. And we were kind of on our own. And I look back, and we've looked back as elders, as many of you guys, part of the plant team even, looking and saying, you know, if it had happened the way we wanted it to happen, according to our timing, then it wouldn't be at all like it is today. Because God knew what He was doing. And that's what Romans chapter 5, verse 6 says. Paul was talking to the Romans, the church at Rome that he planted, about Jesus and their salvation and what it meant for Jesus to come. And he said, you see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. At just the right time. And if you know anything about Jewish history, Old Testament history, we're actually going to do a series in March called Word 3. So it's a threequel, a third one from the Word series. And we're going to look at the kings and prophets of the Old Testament. And one of the things that you'll discover as we look at that time, as we look at the end of the Old Testament, is that the Jewish people had been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for this Messiah that had been promised, frankly, had been promised through Adam, but even more specifically through Abraham, and then, you know, about 500 and some years later, through David, and they're still waiting. Some 2,000 years later, God, you promised this Messiah, this one that would make things right. Where is He? What is going on? And then we have what's called the 400 silent years between the Old Testament and the New Testament, where it's just kind of like, okay, and Israel is waiting. And then it says here in Romans, it says in Galatians too, when the time had fully come, when everything was ready, when the scene was set, when the stage was in place, when all the pieces were right where they needed to be, then, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. It was all part of God's perfect plan. And I don't remember what series it was. I think it was one of the Christmas ones a few years back. We talked about how God's birth, the birth of Jesus, was so interesting because at that time, there was, you know, this message of the Messiah needed to go to the world. And there were some things that had happened during that intertestamental period, that 400 years of silence between the Old and New Testament. One of them was that the Romans had taken over at one point. And the way the Roman establishment worked and got throughout their kingdom is they made very substantial, real roads so that people could travel quickly. And then at one point before the Romans came along, the Greeks, Alexander the Great, who was Greek, conquered the known world. And the way he did things is he made sure that everybody spoke the same language, because that was how he could kind of deal with his people. So they all learned this Greek language, this Koine Greek. And that's why the New Testament is written in Greek, and you have Jewish people speaking in Greek. Why was the Old Testament Hebrew, the New Testament Greek? Because they were speaking Greek. Everybody spoke Greek at that point. And so you have this message that needs to go out to the world, and God said, I'm going to wait until the roads are all set up and the language is all the same so that this message can make it out everywhere it needs to go. Because at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the godly. See, God's timing is perfect. My oldest son, Jack, got the game Risk for Christmas. And I think I like it a little bit too much. But if you've ever played Risk, first of all, set aside, like, it's like Monopoly. Let me ask you this question. How many of you have ever played a game of Risk? Raise your hand. How many of you have ever finished a game of Risk? That's not bad. Okay, how many of you ever played a game of Monopoly? How many of you ever finished the game of Monopoly? And the hands go down. Like, it's one of those games where, like, you know, statistically you probably finish like 10% of the games you ever start, because it goes on forever. But one of the things that I was really enjoying, and especially, I mean, okay, I'm 40. My sons and daughter, you know, you weren't playing at that time, Car. So my 12-year-old daughter, my 10-year-old son, my 8-year-old son. I may have played my age and knowledge and experience to my advantage a little bit. So it kind of, like, I'm boasting about, like, really? So what, you picked on the little kid? Yeah. But in this game, I mean, I was setting it up. And it was funny watching, especially the boys going, like, look, we won that city. We won that country. We won that country. We won that country. And then at just the right time, all of a sudden, I just swept through and won the game. I mean, I was the first game of Risk I've ever finished in my life. And I beat them. I beat my 8-year-old and my 10-year-old and my 12-year-old. But all that to say that from especially Tommy's perspective, he thought he was winning. He's like, yeah, look at this. I just defeated that country, and I defeated that country. And he was spreading himself thin, and I was totally setting him up. And then waited until he had spread himself thin. And I'm giving away some of my secrets because my daughters are listening to. I let them fight each other. I say things like, hey, they look like they're getting pretty close to you. You should probably fight them. Don't take my advice, but you might want to, fight each other so you lose a lot of troops so I can come in and win. That would be underhanded. So I just say, don't, I'm just advice. You don't have to listen to me. But anyway, all that to say that watching Tommy think he's winning. And yet, when I was ready, I turned the tables and I won. Because at just the right time, that's when I was seeing, because I was seeing a bigger picture. Now, am I implying that I'm God? No. But it works very similar for us. Is that we go through these hard times and we say, God, when? God, why? And we're busy, moving our troops. And we think, oh, hey, look, I got that one thing. Or this is going to turn out the way I hope. And then it doesn't. And we're like, God, what's going on? Because he sees a much bigger picture. He says, look, and maybe you're going through a hard time. Again, the Wounded series, we talked all about hard times and going through difficult things. And sometimes we go through hard times just because God wants to grow us through that time. Sometimes we go through hard times because there's someone else we need to encourage and to say, yeah, I've been there. I can come alongside you. And we've talked about that, so I'm not going to go over all that. But understanding that God's timing is perfect in all of those things, and we need to remember that. And Paul understood that. And so he could say, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. I can go through these difficult times because I know that God's timing is perfect. And then the third thing we need to remember when it comes to our hardships is that God is powerful in our weakness. And I think, as human beings, we want strength. We want power. And I'm not talking about necessarily muscular power, but we want control. We want to be able to manage what's going on in our lives. And it's a human thing. Because when we're in control, then we're in control. Like, if I'm running the show, then the show goes the way I want it to go. Unfortunately, that's not true. God is the one running the show. And when we try to be in control and try to be perfect and try to have everything our way and make sure that everything fits, we miss the fact that God's timing is perfect. And that God is powerful in our weakness. And this is just such a cool passage. Paul is writing to the church in Corinth in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 here. And he's kind of sharing some things going on in his life. And then he says in verse 7, the second part of verse 7, he says this. Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Now, there's been lots of discussion. What does that mean? The general consensus, as far as big picture story, is that something bad. There was something bad. Maybe it literally was Satan tormenting him, or he was being metaphorical, saying, oh, this was like hell. Because that's what he was saying. Because it was something that awful. Something was going on in my life. And it says three times, I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. So he goes to God and says, God, this is awful. I'm serving you. I'm planting churches. I'm writing the Bible. Come on. Give me some help here. Three different times. This thing is so bad, God. It's like a messenger of Satan. And maybe it is Satan. I'm being tormented. It is a thorn in my flesh. It is hurting me. It is bringing me down. God, come on. I'm your man. He said to me, God said to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. See, my grace, what I've got for offering you, it's all that you need. Because God's saying, my power, God's power is made perfect in weakness. So God is saying to Paul, look, when you're going through a hard time, when you're at a spot where you can't do it anymore, that is awesome. Because when I step in, everybody knows that I'm doing it and not Paul. Everybody can stand back and say, wow, look at God. In your prime groups, you have a chance, and we have an elders meeting tomorrow night, and we share in both of these things, God moments. What have we seen God doing? And it's so incredible when you step back and going, what in the world? God did what? How? That's not what I would have done. That's not how I would have operated. And that's because God's power is made perfect in weakness. And there are people, there are some of you in this room, I mean, frankly, all of you in this room are in one way, shape, or form part of a God moment. You know, and I could just share stories. I'd love to, but if, you know, without talking to you ahead of time, it'd be inappropriate. But just kind of these, like, wow. I mean, I guess I can talk about the Hostetler she did post on Facebook. You know, it was a year ago, last week, that they said, we're going to go to church. And they came a year ago. So, like, a year and a week ago, they didn't. And ever since then, they have. Like, that's just like, wow, what in the world? Look how God is doing that and feeling loved and accepted. And then the stories that we're following on Facebook, on that, the comments on that post. Like, God is doing stuff. And there's no way for us to say, yeah, well, we paid them. And that is why they came. And so we had it all worked out. We added some extra money in our budget. And I said, we need to get to this hostile church. So we're going to pay them. Now, you guys don't realize we did this. No, we didn't do that. But we step back and say, wow, look what God has done. And then look at the, you know, you're hosting prime group in your home. Like just the whole story. And this is one. I mean, about what God is doing. And because God's power is made perfect in our weakness, we want to have control. We want to figure it out. And God says, no, I don't want you to be. I want you to go through hardships so that I can show up strong. And that's what I love what Paul says. Then Paul says, bring it on. He says, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. He said, you think I'm weak? Well, watch how weak I can be. Not that he's intentionally, you know, hurting himself, but because when I am weak, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. Paul is not a crazy man. He's not some kind of masochist, because he's not saying, I just like to hurt. No, he says, if these things happen, I go through hard times, I say, bring it on, because when I am weak, then I am strong. Because he understood that he can do all things. He can get through all these hard times because Christ and dynamos him, because Christ gives him strength. So he said, I don't need to be in control. I don't need to be in charge. I don't need to have it all worked out or figured out or understand it, because I know that when I don't, God comes through and shines in a way that I never could. God's story becomes the story, and that's what it's all about. Nowhere in the Bible does it say that the story, I mean, I guess it would say John. I don't think there's a Kirk in the Bible. You know, I don't think there's an Eric or a Jeb. There's definitely some Matthews and some of those. But the story isn't about us. It's not about Matthew. It's not about John. It's not about Peter. The story is about God. It is his story of what he is doing throughout history, throughout creation, for the sake of the people that he loves. And so he says, I will boast all the more gladly. If I'm in a hard time, bring it. Because I know that God is going to come through. And when he comes through, it's not going to be like, hey, good job, Sean. You figured that one out, didn't you? No, it's going to be, wow. I had no idea. I mean, I remember specifically with being with Kendra, we were in the parking lot up at the former Kmart building. And we had MC3 was kind of birthing in the process, it hadn't started, and there were just some really ugly things that had happened. Some really hard things. And I remember sitting in that parking lot, like, weeping, going,
can we do this? We can't. I don't know if we can do that. I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can keep up. I don't even know how in the world it happened. But, like, Hannah pulled up next to us in the parking lot. Like, we weren't like, hey, everybody, we're hanging out at the parking lot of Kmart. And she had, like, a card and some just a little note of encouragement. And it was like, wow, that is exactly what we needed. And looking back now, going, yeah, do you know why I couldn't do it? Because God had something in mind. Because God was working something out. And I'm not saying all of your hard times are all going to turn into wonderful occasions. And again, you can listen to the Wounded series online to kind of get a feel for what was going on in Habakkuk's life and the hard things he went through. But I will say this, that we can trust that God is in control. That we can go through hard times with the same perspective that Paul had. And he said, I can do it all. Hey, if it's good, I can do it. God will give me the strength. If it's bad, I can do it. God will give me the strength. If I've got a lot, hey, I can do it. God will help me navigate through that. And maybe we need to do that. We'll talk more about that next week. When it comes to money is evil. Spoiler. And how God can help us through that time. And if we don't have anything, God can help us through. We can do all things through Christ to give us strength. So when it comes to hardships, when it comes to hard times in your life, remember these things. Remember that God is present in your troubles. You are not alone. We are not alone. God is perfect in His timing. He will come through if and when it is right. And sometimes He doesn't come through because it's better for us for Him not to come through. Understand that. I'm not saying everything is going to be the way you want it, which goes on to the third thing. God is powerful in our weakness. When we are weak, He is strong. And so we can do what Paul says here when it comes to all things through Christ who gives us strength. It doesn't mean the crop is that God can make us do anything I want. That's not what it's about. Completed, it means that God helps in hardship. So one of the things I want to do here, and I'll fix that. The completed, God helps in hardship. One of the things I just want to encourage you with, one of the things we've done over the years and different series and stuff is kind of giving you a YouVersion plan to do together as a church. There's one here called Twisted. It's by Craig Groeschel. It's only 7 days, so we've got, 7 weeks, so you can do one a week, one day a week. But it's, and actually I know specifically today's passage was part of it. But it's looking at different passages along the same lines that have been twisted over the years by followers of Jesus and by non-followers of Jesus, we'll see in a couple of the ones we look at in a few weeks. But it's just a cool little plan to kind of follow along, track similar thoughts and ideas if you have a YouVersion. If you don't, it's a great tool. Reading the Bible, it's free. The reading plans are there. But just something to throw out there for the next 7 weeks to look at over those times. But I want you to get this, that God does help us in our hardship. We are given power not to be superheroes. We are empowered to get through the good, the bad, and the ugly in life when we rely on Jesus. Because when we are weak, then He is strong. Let's pray. Father, thank You so much for Your strength in us. Thank You for giving us what we need. I thank You that this verse isn't something completely outlandish and crazy supernatural, but more just normally supernatural. That You give us what we need to get through the good and the bad times. And God, I pray for every one of us in this room that we would remember these things when we are in hard times. And if we're in one right now, help us to remember that You are with us, that Your timing is always perfect, and that when we are weak, You are strong. Help us to get that idea and rely on You and to be able to boldly proclaim, as Paul did, that we can do all of it. We can deal with the whole thing, the good or the bad, because of You giving us strength. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.